The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to Matthew. When Jesus entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things, and who gave you this authority?" Jesus said to them, "I will also ask you one question. If you tell me the answer, then I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. Did the baptism of John come from heaven, or was it of human origin?" And they argued with one another, "If we say from heaven, he will say to us, 'Why then did you not believe him?' But if we say of human origin, we are afraid of the crowd, for all regard John as a prophet." So they answered Jesus, "We do not know." And he said to them, "Neither will I tell you of what authority I am doing these things. What do you think? A man had two sons. He went to the first and said, 'Son, go and work in the vineyard today.' He answered, 'I will not.' But later he changed his mind and he went. The father went to the second and said the same. And he answered, 'I go, sir.' But he did not go. Which of the two did the will of their father?" They said, "The first." The Gospel of our Lord.
So the question is this little story that Jesus tells about two brothers, the dad who comes to the one and says, "Will ya?" And he says, "No way." And then thinks about it and goes and does whatever it is the dad's asking. And the other brother, the dad says, "Will ya?" And he says, "Yeah, sure." And then blows him off. Is there anybody here who cannot identify with both? Good. Okay. Because we're all like this, right? I mean, and both of the brothers kind of have this "you're not the boss of me" attitude about, you know, the dad and whatnot. So today's passage, and again, it starts with this conversation between Jesus and these people that he's been hanging out with, raises the whole question of authority. And we're going to be talking about that in a minute. But first, and more important, our very own Allison Jaffe. Allison, come on up.
I do have to say in my defense with Isabel that I wouldn't be doing the homeless work unless her husband hadn't said, "Oh, what a great idea. You should do that, Allison." So I'm just doing a little boomerang back at you, Isabel. Yeah, it's Tom's fault. It's Jeff's because Jeff is. So my fellow spiritual travelers, don't you like that? I'm here to introduce the topic of stewardship this year. And I'm asking you to consider your plan to donate, basically give money to St. Peter's this year. I've never talked about how I got here before, so that's the only kind of nerve-wracking thing for me today. So I just wanted to give you some background. My family attended a very traditional, very old school Episcopal church, and I did not find God there. But I was lucky enough to attend Camp Galilee as a child and as a teenager, and I had the wacky uncle who was a charismatic priest. And so I kind of got, you know, the other side of it, where you didn't just, you know, sit there quietly in your pew and rotely read the prayer book, which of course in those days we were arguing about, because that was the whole green book, and, you know, anyway. I digress. When I went to the lake, Lake Tahoe, I saw the simplicity. I saw God there. I saw the pine trees, the cross on Mount Tilak, and most importantly, the people around me. My journey in Carson City started with Valerie. Again, people, Valerie Wood. I helped Valerie with Ron's service. And in those days, the people drew me in. The leadership did not. It was still kind of old style. When I decided to come back after looking at other places in Carson City, and I think all of us have looked at other places, I came back and Father Jeff was just beginning his journey here. Hmm. A while later, probably the hugest impact on me was Bob Reed, because Bob Reed came with his music. The tone changed with Father Jeff, and the music came. It drew me, and it still remains a powerful message to me. And I'm so glad Bob is here today, because I don't think he realizes what he did to so many of us. And I thank you for that, Bob. Initially, I came back, not for myself. I was a mom, and I had two young daughters, and they needed to meet God. As I was here longer, thank God I had a place to grieve as my family, my marriage fell apart. My friends were here. And St. Peter's filled my heart. The sermons Father Jeff gave did and still fill my spirit. Like I said, I've been to other churches. There are really wonderful pastors in town. We're very lucky. One of my favorites is Pat Propster. But they're not, the people here are not there. And here, the main thing, and I'm looking at Jeanette right now, I can ask the tough questions, and I have people with me to join me. When I say, you know, the Easter Jesus, I don't know. I don't have anybody tell me, well, you're not a Christian. I have people say, you know, I kind of have that question too. And we can talk about it, and we can learn about it, and we can hear about Jesus, we can hear about Scripture from a different point of view. And most important to me, I don't have to believe everything. Jeff is not saying, this you will believe. And I can have dialogue with other church members here. We can argue without being disagreeable. Thank God. Right? And I can, you know, be mad. I left one time because of these stupid windows. At that point, Hallie and I had this huge plan. We were going to open a middle school here because the schools were overcrowded and things were terrible. And these windows that I thought were very ugly, the brown part especially still is, needed to be fixed because we had to keep the, you know, we're in the historical district. You've got to keep everything going. Anyway, I came back. And they're really nice. And when one time when Chuck gave the sermon and he was talking about the window parts up there, I'm like, yeah, all right, fine, they're okay. Over the years, I've learned about service, which is how I was raised, always that you do your work, you take care of your home, and you serve. The hardest thing for me to learn here is to let my friends serve me when I need it. And again, I thank you for that. So my purpose today is to ask you to spend your money here. If you're already, if you've already made a commitment, a financial commitment, I'm asking you to increase it by 10%. If you have not made a spiritual commitment through through your pocketbook, I'm asking you to do that today, because we are a place where new people come, and if sometimes they stay with us, and sometimes they, I believe, because I talk to people a lot from the back, they consider what we have to say. And if they land at a different church, they may be thinking about that. And if they never go to church, they still think that we are a welcoming place. And I'm asking you to make sure that we're able to welcome other people and to serve all of us who are still here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you, Allison. Yeah, I remember all those conversations about the windows, and I thought they were ugly too until we found out from these experts that the committee was bringing in that they are absolutely unique. I mean, they were fired here in Carson City, there's nothing else like these windows anywhere. And I thought, well, okay. kind of like Allison. Yeah. And it turns out they're kind of spectacular. And as she pointed out, very much part of the history of the church, and so and of the historic district. So with Allison's share in mind, today's gospel raises a really interesting question. I mean, these Pharisees who have been hanging out with Jesus all along, and again, to point out that probably the reason they're hanging out is that they're buddies. I mean, that Jesus, there's a good chance that historically Jesus was a Pharisee himself, which is why they're all together and they're doing what Jewish people do. They're having conversation and they're arguing. I mean, they're arguing without being disagreeable, except for in this particular case where they try to catch Jesus up and say, hey, whose authority are you doing all this stuff? You know, teaching and healing and exorcisms and all this other good stuff. And he throws back at them about John the Baptist, and of course, they're typical church leaders. They get all weeny about the whole thing, go, oh, we don't know what a lie that is. I mean, and if you think about it, on the one hand, when you and I are confronted with, you know, sort of the mysteries of life, the mysteries of God and the universe, it makes sense sometimes to say, we don't know. But to chicken out the way they did in the story, that's a whole different deal. And Jesus knows that, and so he tells this little story about these two brothers. It's a hoot of a story, and the whole point of it is, and this is the heart of the part of the heart of the teachings of Jesus, and Allison's sharing this morning speaks right to that, and it's this. In answer to the question, by whose authority do you do this? Jesus understood, and you can see this all throughout the gospel story, his teachings, his activities, the people he hangs out with, shares meals with, is that you and I live under each other's authority. Now, I know the word authority is a bad word for anybody that grew up through the 60s. I get that. I'm one of them, you know. You're not the boss of me, and question authority, and all that good stuff, and you can see to some extent where that's gotten us. And so maybe it's time that we recapture this ancient understanding of relationship, and it's this. Jesus knew clearly that you and I live under each other's authority. Examples. As the rector of the parish, you folks live under my authority as the rector of the parish. As the rector of the parish, I live under your authority. I mean, you have a voice in our common life. As the rector of the parish, I live under the authority of the wardens and the vestry. We stay pretty close. We talk to each other all the time. As vestry and wardens, they live under my authority as the rector of the parish. As parishioners, you live under each other's authority. And others in this congregation live under your authority. Think about your household. You live under the authority of your loved ones. Guys, if you have any question about that, check in with your wives. They will clarify in a heartbeat how this works. Yeah. And in our neighborhoods, think about our neighborhoods. We live under each other's authority. Is this ringing a bell for you? And normally we don't, I wanted to bring this to our attention because normally we don't think in these terms, and yet it's part of the heart of the gospel. I mean, the teachings of Jesus. We live under each other's authority, including the authority of God. And one of the ways that this has been articulated in particular in the Episcopal Church, and I think part of the freedom that Allison was describing in her experience and in her story lies at the heart of the Episcopal tradition and really the Anglican tradition. Some of you have been exposed to a 12-step recovery where in the third step you hear made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. And of course, many folks coming out of the 20th century figure, oh yeah, well, that's part of the genius of 12-step recovery, and it's been a great gift to humanity, which it certainly has been, but it's really a modern and postmodern articulation of something that has been at the heart of the Episcopal and the Anglican tradition from its inception. Most people, when you talk about the Episcopal Church, assume that it was Henry VIII that invented the Church of England. And I'm here to tell you that Henry was a little too preoccupied to do anything that intelligent. And the blood in his body was not flowing in that direction, if you know what I mean. And that's all I'm going to say about that. It was not Henry VIII. It was a woman, of all people, who came along, who, as she grew up, whose life was threatened by all of the religious forces that were swirling around in the 1500s, and there was all this kind of craziness, and people were having their heads lopped off and getting burned at the stake for all kinds of stupid things that some folks are still arguing about today. God bless their pea-picking hearts. And she comes along, and through this foment and through this conflict, ends up being crowned Queen of England, Elizabeth I. And Elizabeth, through her experience of the conflict and tension, went, you know what? It's time to put an end to this, and it's time to step up and get smart about this. And so she established something called the Settlement, which we now refer to as the Elizabethan Settlement. And it is a complex document, no question about that, to address a very complex and convoluted situation in England. But the heart of it was this. Worship God however you understand God. That was Elizabeth's great genius and her great gift to the church and to the world. And it is that concept, that idea, that basic sort of human understanding of relationship on which you and I as an Episcopal Church roll. Worship God however you understand God. And that means we get to question, we get to argue without being disagreeable, we get to doubt, all the stuff that, you know, from the vantage point of other flavors of Christianity, we're told, oh, you can't do that. You got to straighten up and fly right. Not here. Because there is no straighten up and fly right. There is God as we understand God. And that is, it is a principle on which you and I find this incredible freedom to be simply who we are and bring the gifts that we have, you know, for the betterment both of the congregation and ultimately for the world, with one little challenge. And the challenge is found in the passage from Exodus that Sandy read to us earlier, where the people, they've been rescued, they've been freed from slavery in Egypt, and they're wandering in the desert, and yes, their lives are compromised, and yes, they're whining. And not without reason. I mean, they don't have water. They're getting thirsty, and if you're in the high desert, like in the Sinai, you're going to die. And so they're a little concerned, but they whine an awful lot. Sound familiar? And Moses gets a little freaked out, so he starts to whine to God. And so God says, strike the rock twice, for crying out loud. Boom, boom, strikes the rock. Water, yay. And you think to yourself, hoo-hoo, you know, here's a story of victory. Woo-hoo, we are victorious. We have water. And God does what we tell him to do. And then, yeah, you know where I'm going with this. And so the author of this part of the Exodus tradition ends the story with, and they called the place Massah and Meribah because they were quarreling with God. It is a cautionary tale. And here's the caveat. Worship God, be in relationship with God as you understand God, but don't, please, do not turn God into a purveyor of commodities or a commodity broker. And everybody in this room, I suspect, knows how this works. I created my own little laundry list of God as commodities broker, and here they are. We need water. That's how the ancient ones did it. I want to be cured. Here's a good one. I need a parking space. Yeah. I want the grocery line to be shorter. Or my favorite, the Costco gas line. Oh, my God. People at Costco, if you're one of those, just get your gas and go, will you? And God, make it happen, right? And you can fill in the blanks. You have your own form of, you know, demanding that God become, a commodities broker. And I like to refer to it as the low hum of self-will. It's always there, it's always in motion, it's always sort of responding and reacting to the world, you know, from this very self-centered kind of place. It's always kind of this low buzz. Sometimes it gets louder, you know, sometimes we find ourselves telling everybody else what to do and how to do it. That's when the low hum of self-will becomes self-will run riot. Be that as it may, we're all familiar with this. And it's the one consistent caution that the scriptures hold out for us, both the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian scriptures. Worship God and God however you understand God, but please do yourself a favor. Don't turn God into a commodities broker. Don't do it. And when you catch yourself doing it, back away. I mean, Janis Joplin's, you know, famous song, Oh Lord, Won't You Buy Me a Mercedes-Benz, right? I mean, it was the great parody of this basic sort of religious, and there's a whole lot of flavors of Christianity that do this, that have turned God into a commodities broker. Come on up and be healed. Come on up and be cured. Whoa, easy on the throttle there. So with that little challenge or caution in mind, you and I have been given this amazing gift to approach God, to worship God, to be in relationship with God, however we understand God, and to realize that in the mix, you and I live under each other's authority. And that is a huge gift. Take a deep breath. And give it up for Allison.